Welcome, Discovery Rangers. Today we will be exploring caffeinated sharks, invisible ocean chemicals. What's in the water?
Picture this. You're swimming in the crystal clear waters of the Bahamas.
Oh, that sounds amazing right about now.
Right. So you see colorful fish darting around a coral reef, maybe some playful dolphins in the distance, and then a majestic shark glides by.
Okay, a little scary, but very cool.
But instead of just hunting for its next meal, imagine this apex predator is swimming around holding a hot cup of coffee in one fin and, like, taking a headache pill with the other.
Well, that is quite the mental image. Just a highly caffeinated, slightly achy shark cruising the tropical reef.
It sounds totally like a cartoon.
Yeah.
But a new study out of the Bahamas just proved it is very, very real.
Yeah, it really did.
So welcome to today's deep dive. We are going through a stack of recent marine biology reports and some guides to the Earth's water cycle to trace this completely invisible thread.
We're basically going on a mission to uncover how our morning routines and, you know, our medicine cabinets are secretly hijacking the bloodstreams of wild ocean predators.
Exactly. And most importantly, we want to learn how you, listening right now, can become a real-life ocean hero.
Because the scientific data here is, well, it's a massive wake-up call. We are looking at a study conducted around Eleuthera Island in the Bahamas.
Which is gorgeous, by the way.
Oh, absolutely pristine. Mm-hmm. So researchers went out and took blood samples from 85 different wild sharks.
Wow. Catching 85 wild sharks is no joke.
No, it's not. And this was across 5 different species, too. Mm. They weren't just giving these animals a standard health check. They were running advanced toxicology screens.
So they were specifically looking for human chemicals.
Exactly. Pharmaceuticals, both legal and illegal.
And the numbers they found are just staggering. Out of those 85 wild sharks, 28 of them tested positive for at least one of 4 specific human drugs.
Which is like roughly 1/3 of the entire group.
Yeah, a third. They found caffeine, cocaine, and 2 different types of human painkillers. There was diclofenac, which is a prescription anti-inflammatory, and acetaminophen.
Right, which is the main active ingredient in everyday medicines, like Tylenol.
Finding human chemicals in marine predators isn't entirely new, right? Like, I think I read cocaine had been found before.
Yeah, that's true. Trace amounts of cocaine had previously been detected in sharks in the waters off the coast of Brazil.
Okay, so what makes this Bahamas study so crazy?
Well, the geographical location is a huge part of it. We're talking about the Bahamas, which is renowned globally for having highly protected, super clean marine environments.
Right, it's not a bustling industrial port.
Exactly. And here is where the science crosses a totally new frontier. This study represents the very first time ever anywhere in the world that caffeine and acetaminophen have been detected in any shark species.
Wait, anywhere?
Yep.
Like, ever?
Yep. First time ever. It forces us to, you know, reevaluate our whole definition of an untouched environment.
That is wild.
And the researchers didn't just find these drugs floating passively in the blood. They documented active physical impacts on the animal's biology.
Meaning the drugs were actually doing something to the sharks.
Exactly. They measured what biologists call metabolic markers. You can think of these as biological signposts that show how hard an engine like the shark's body is working or struggling to keep functioning.
Okay, so if a doctor checks my metabolic markers, they look at, like, my cholesterol or blood sugar. What signposts are marine biologists looking at in a shark that just absorbed human painkillers?
So the screens revealed significant changes in 3 key areas. First, they saw alterations in their triglycerides.
Which are fats, right?
Yeah, the essential fats the body relies on for energy storage. Second, they noted shifts in urea levels, which is all about how the shark's body processes and clears out waste. And finally, they recorded huge spikes in lactate.
Lactate. Oh, athletes track that all the time. Like, when you run really hard, your muscles produce lactic acid. It's a massive sign of physical stress.
That is the exact mechanism at play here. When a foreign chemical like Tylenol enters a shark's system, its liver has to go into absolute overdrive to filter out that toxin.
It's trying to clean its own blood.
Right. And that metabolic heavy lifting takes massive amounts of energy, which burns through their stored fats, the triglycerides.
Ah, see.
So the exertion and the toxicity cause that spike in lactate, signaling heavy biological stress.
So even if we can't see the shark acting weird, like, we don't know if they're swimming faster from the caffeine. We know for an absolute fact that their internal organs are fighting a chemical battle.
Yes. Their fats, their waste filtration, their stress levels, all hijacked by our medicine. We are seeing the biological consequences at the very top of the food chain.
I am struggling to understand the scale of this, though. Wait, the Bahamas are basically a tropical paradise.
They are.
If this is happening in perfectly clear island waters, does that mean there is literally nowhere left in the ocean that humans haven't touched? I mean, how does a headache pill survive the journey from a bathroom sink to a shark in the open ocean without getting totally diluted?
It's a great question. And the visual clarity of that water is incredibly deceiving. The sources identify two twin culprits here: wastewater effluent and coastal runoff.
Okay, let's break those down.
Right, so the mechanics are crucial. When you take a medication, like Tylenol, your body doesn't absorb 100% of the chemical.
Uh-huh.
A big portion of it just passes right through your digestive system and gets flushed down the toilet.
Okay, so it goes into the local sewage system, but aren't those treatment plants designed to clean the water before it hits the ocean?
Well, they are designed to filter out solid human waste, and they neutralize harmful bacteria. But they are absolutely not equipped to filter out dissolved microscopic pharmaceutical compounds.
Oh, because it's at the molecular level.
Exactly. So those chemicals just slip right through the filters. That's wastewater effluent, the treated water that gets discharged back into nature, carrying a totally invisible payload of medicines, caffeine, and even soap chemicals.
That makes sense. And the second culprit, runoff, that's when weather gets involved, right?
Yeah. Imagine a heavy rainstorm washing over the island. It sweeps across roads, driveways, lawns, picking up oils, fertilizers, and trash.
And it just carries all that untreated chemical soup straight into the coastal rivers and out to sea?
Precisely. And you also have to factor in the economy of the Bahamas. It's a massive tourist hotspot.
Oh, true. People from all over the world.
Right. So when tourism booms, the local infrastructure is suddenly dealing with hundreds of extra vacation homes, mega resorts, rental properties.
You suddenly have thousands of extra people packed into a concentrated area. That means thousands of morning coffees, thousands of people taking pain relievers for, like, a sunburn, all flushing toilets at the exact same time.
Exactly. The sheer volume puts an unimaginable load on the local treatment plants. They get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And scientists call these chemicals contaminants of emerging concern because they don't break down easily. They dissolve into the water, making them invisible, and they enter the marine food chain at the absolute foundational level.
You know, this whole thing sounds like a game of tag, but with invisible chemicals?
How do you mean?
Well, the tiniest sea creatures, like plankton, they absorb these dissolved drugs straight from the water. They get tagged.
That is a brilliant way to visualize biomagnification. Yes, the plankton only absorbs a microscopic fraction of a milligram of medicine. But then a small fish comes along and eats thousands of those plankton.
So now that small fish holds the chemical payload of 1,000 plankton. It's
right. And then a larger fish eats hundreds of those small fish.
Yeah.
It keeps multiplying. The chemicals aren't digested, they're just hoarded.
Passed up the ladder. So by the time you get to a top predator, like a reef shark, the shark isn't just taking a sip of polluted water. When it eats a big fish, it inherits a massive, concentrated dose of everything the animals below it ate for years.
Exactly. Sharks are basically the ultimate biological magnifying glass for ocean health. If a shark's blood tests positive for human painkillers, it means the entire food web beneath them is completely saturated.
Okay, so the food chain explains how the chemicals travel up through the animals. But how does the water carry it around the entire planet?
Ah, that brings us to the Earth's ultimate natural recycling engine, the water cycle.
Right, it's like a giant perpetual motion machine. Evaporation, condensation, precipitation, and collection.
You've got it. But there's a dangerous misconception that the water cycle acts as a perfect purifier. To understand how our pollution hitches a ride, we have to look at the mechanics.
Well, it starts with the sun, right? The sun's heat turns liquid water in the oceans into water vapor, which is an invisible gas that rises into the sky. That's evaporation.
Correct.
But wait, if evaporation turns water into gas, how did these chemicals hitch a ride into the clouds? Don't they just stay behind and make the ocean soup even more concentrated? Doesn't evaporation just pull up pure H2O?
That is true for heavy solids and salts. That's why rain isn't salty.
Right.
But many human-made chemicals, including some pharmaceuticals and industrial byproducts, are what we call volatile compounds.
Meaning they react easily.
Yeah, and when the water evaporates, some of these microscopic pollutants actually aerosolize. They catch a ride into the atmosphere right alongside the water vapor.
That is terrifying. So the clouds themselves become carriers.
They do. Mm. As that warm vapor rises, it hits the cold air high up, condenses back into liquid droplets, and forms clouds. And those clouds are essentially holding a reservoir, of trace chemicals.
Wow.
We see the most extreme version of this with acid rain. Factories release sulfur dioxide. It physically bonds with water vapor in the sky. And when precipitation happens, when it rains or snows, it falls as a weak acid.
Which can devastate forests and alter lakes. So the water cycle is actually a distribution network.
Exactly.
The heavier chemicals stay in the coastal waters, concentrating the soup the sharks swim in. And the lighter pollutants get carried up into the clouds, blown thousands of miles, and rained down on places nowhere near a city.
The interconnectedness means there is virtually no isolated drop of water on Earth. And, you know, this matters profoundly for everyone, not just sharks.
Because the ocean is our life support system.
Exactly. Marine ecosystems produce roughly half of the oxygen we breathe. They regulate our global climate by absorbing heat. And they provide food for billions of people. When the apex predators are failing, it's a blaring warning alarm for our own survival.
When you lay it out like that, this globally connected chemical soup spanning from our bathroom sinks to the clouds fixing it, sounds mathematically impossible.
It does seem daunting.
Do we need to invent some kind of giant science fiction mega machine to just filter the oceans?
The sources actually address that exact fantasy. Building massive underwater filters to strain out chemicals is wildly impractical.
Too expensive.
Too expensive and physically impossible. The analogy they use is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to filter the ocean is like trying to empty a giant overflowing bathtub with a tiny little spoon while the faucet is still running at full blast.
Oh man, yeah, the scale is just too big. And these drugs are dissolved at the molecular level. A giant net can catch a plastic bottle, but it can't catch dissolved Tylenol.
Which means there's only one mechanically sound solution.
Yeah.
We have to turn off the faucet.
Stop it at the source.
Exactly. And the amazing part is, the power to turn off that faucet doesn't rest with giant corporations or sci-fi inventions. It rests on our daily habits. Anyone, at any age, can be an ocean hero.
Okay, I want to dig into that. Because we always hear reduce, reuse, recycle. And frankly, it can feel like a bit of a cliche. How does that actually turn off the chemical faucet?
Let's look at reducing single-use plastics like straws and bags. Plastics don't organically decompose, right? They just break down into tiny microplastics.
Right, I've heard of those.
Well, these microscopic shards act like chemical sponges in the ocean. They actively absorb and concentrate the exact dissolved pharmaceuticals we've been talking about.
Oh, wow. So when small fish eat the microplastics, it accelerates that biomagnification game of tag.
Exactly. So when you choose a reusable cloth bag or a metal water bottle, you aren't just saving trash from a landfill. You are physically preventing a toxic sponge from entering the food web.
That makes a ton of sense. What about the drain? I assume we shouldn't pour stuff down there either.
Yes. The drains in our sinks are not black holes that magically make things disappear. They are direct pipelines to the watershed. Pouring harsh cleaners or old medicines down the drain guarantees they end up in the ocean.
So use natural stuff, like baking soda and vinegar.
Exactly. It ensures the runoff from your home is safe.
Okay, but what about the tap itself? We're always told to turn off the water while brushing our teeth, but it feels like a massive global crisis for just one kid to fix. Can me turning off the tap for 2 minutes really mechanically make a difference to a shark in the Bahamas?
It's totally rational to feel dwarfed by the problem, but the answer is definitively yes, and it comes back to the hydraulic load on those wastewater plants.
The plants that get overwhelmed by the tourists.
Right. When you and your family and your whole neighborhood reduce the sheer volume of water flowing down the drains, you drastically reduce the pressure on your local water system.
Oh, I see the connection. If the plant isn't drowning in millions of gallons of excess shower water, it operates way more efficiently.
Yes. And during a massive rainstorm, a plant that isn't already at maximum capacity is far less likely to overflow and dump raw, chemical-laden sewage straight into the rivers.
So turning off the sink is a mechanical intervention. It directly prevents the local sewage system from failing.
Exactly. When millions of people make that minor adjustment, the global faucet of pollution is significantly throttled. Local actions instantly become global outcomes.
That reframes the whole concept. It's not just about saving water. It's about managing the flow of the entire system.
Precisely.
So to synthesize the incredible journey we've tracked today, a new study out of the Bahamas proved that human medicines, from morning caffeine to headache pills, are actively altering wild sharks.
Yes, these invisible chemicals bypass our wastewater systems, enter the coast, and are fiercely magnified as they travel up the food chain.
And because the Earth uses a single, continuous water cycle, these pollutants can be transported anywhere on the globe.
which is why we can't rely on imaginary giant filters. The only viable intervention is at the source, our own sinks, our consumption habits, and our waste.
It is a profound reminder of our immense power. The choices you make in your bathroom today really do dictate the health of an apex predator tomorrow.
We are all deeply physically connected to the wild ocean.
We really are. So I want to leave you with a thought for the next time it rains. Step outside or just look out your window and focus on a single raindrop splashing onto your driveway.
It's a great exercise.
Ask yourself, where will that exact drop of water be a year from now? Could it be evaporating into a massive thundercloud? Could it be swimming alongside a playful dolphin or coursing through the gills of a majestic shark?
It's entirely possible.
And most importantly, based on the choices you make today, what invisible passenger will that drop of water be carrying with it?
Thanks for listening, Discovery Rangers. If you enjoyed this, please ask Mum or Dad to play another episode for you.